I tend to try and make moves early to get ahead of what happens generally is those lesser players in the middle of the draft and towards the end kind of get bumped up in terms of going for more than they maybe should have. And so I will look very carefully in the early going. And I did this. Freeman was one of the first, 25 or 30 guys out. Starling Marte was one of the first guys out. And Murphy was a little bit later on, if I remember correctly. But I try and look for bargains right off the top or guys that are kind of going at my max bid price so that I know that if I can get those guys locked in, then I can hunt for value elsewhere and in the pitching staff.
Dawn, here's to us November and the waning sun and all the proofs I'd like to prove. We go down tonight.
Hello and welcome to episode 123 of Flags Fly Forever, a Baseball Prospectus fantasy podcast. I'm your host, George Bissell of Baseball Prospectus, and I'm joined tonight by my usual co-host, Mike Gianella. Mike, how's it going? The weather and everything going on in the East Coast? How you holding up?
I'm holding up okay, although, we were supposed to get like a foot of snow, and instead we got like 2 inches of snow and 3 inches of ice. I think I would have preferred the snow.
Yeah, fun fact, I'm up here in Rhode Island, and we got over a foot of snow. I'm not near the ocean, so it was not fun today. So,
I'm glad you have I'm glad you have power because we were worried we wouldn't be able to go tonight because you might have lost your power.
That was the big concern, and I'm thankful we were able to go tonight because we have an awesome guest joining us here on Flags Fly Forever today. He's been with us before, a returning guest, friend of the show, Steve Gardner from USA Today Sports. Steve, how's it going?
Going great, George. I've got some of that snow too, but it was more like 3 or 4 inches, and it was wet and slushy, but easy to shovel.
You were just out in Arizona, so this is quite a dramatic change for you to be going from that to this. So we're glad to have you with us, Steve. And first off, a little bit of housekeeping. You can read all of us at baseballprospectus.com. Well, Mike and I at baseballprospectus.com. You can follow us on Twitter as well. I am at George Bissell. That's with two S's and two L's. Mike is at Mike Gianella. And Steve is at Steve A. Gardner on Twitter. He's got a bunch of stuff going on right now, so make sure you go follow Steve. We're going to talk about the National League Labor Draft. So what I'm going to do is Mike's going to lead the discussion here, and Steve's going to talk about his team and some of the other goings-on from that draft. So I'm going to turn the keys over to Mike, and Mike, take it away.
So Ian Desmond broke his hand, and this happened after the labor auction, but before a lot of people have actually started. We just kind of wanted to ask you, like, how, obviously there's nothing you can do now in labor or in a lot of leagues that have drafted or auctioned, you're stuck, but how do you adjust for an injury like that? I have my approaches, but I think our audience would definitely be curious to hear, like, what you do, with your bid or your draft position.
Well, in the case of Desmond, I look at the fact that, he's going to be out for at least a month. I think that was the last that I saw. He's going to have the surgery, and he's going to be, immobilized for a while. And then they think that he can start ramping things up back after a month. I don't know. I think it's going to be more like maybe 6 weeks, 8 weeks before he's back to normal. I don't mind that. He's not off my draft board by any means, because if you can just get somebody to fill in and be mediocre in that spot, and you get the Desmond that we expect to have from Desmond, and you get his stats, 2/3 of the year, still pretty good. He's going to hit home runs. He'll probably steal some bases as well. So, you could get a 2015 season out of Desmond, even if he comes back in, say, mid-May or late May. So I think that's one of the things, you don't get a zero in that lineup spot. So, yeah, he gets pushed down, but maybe not down as far as you might think with him missing that amount of time.
Yeah, I think unless you're in like a really shallow mix, you know, he's still going to be ranked. You know, it's just kind of that question of where you put him. Yeah, I absolutely agree. So to kind of segue to labor, and first of all, you know, just to, you know, get this out there, thanks for inviting me to, you know, actually come out in person and do the AL. It's always, you know, it's a great experience to watch it, but being there in person, and not just because of the weather, was really great. So, you know, thanks for that first and foremost.
You're certainly welcome, and we are happy to have Baseball Prospectus back in labor. Clay Davenport won a championship in the NL back, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago now. But after he left, there was no Baseball Prospectus representative. So we're very happy to have you back.
Yeah, that's true. We were in the mixed league, and you know, Brett and I were running that team for a while. But yeah, it's great to be back in one of the onlys and to be there with the beautiful weather and the food and the participants. So we're going to start.
And the thing too, you did have a championship in the mixed league, so you need to, you know, get a chance to move up to prove yourself against the AL only competition.
Yeah, it's definitely, if you go out and look, you know, whether it's online right now or when the fantasy, you know, when labor actually comes out, and I think it's about a week and a half now, or a little over a week, you know, you'll see what that lineup is. It's an impressive group. So I'm going to start with the NL, and I wasn't in the NL. The NL, you know, it's 12-team, NL only, you know, 260 budget, you know, typical rotisserie rules. Old school. So I want to start with your team first, Steve. So I was there for the first hour and a half, and I was watching the auction, and you know, I kind of saw what was going on. And I just want to, you know, tee off with this. Did you have a plan in mind? Like, do you have a strategy when you go in, or do you pretty much go where the auction takes you?
I'm more of a go with the flow kind of drafter. I'll start and have a couple of things in mind that I want to make sure that I accomplish. I'll sketch out even some dollar values for some of the positions. But for me, it's the NL is usually just such a wacky auction. I mean, we had guys, you know, Doug Dennis always spends almost nothing on pitching and goes heavily on hitting, so that skews the values. We had Greg Ambrosius and Sean Chiles one year get the top three shortstops in the NL on their team, and everybody else was scrambling to try and find somebody at shortstop and middle infield. So you really have to, you know, think on your feet in the NL historically. It didn't seem, though, that was the case as much this year, that it was a little bit closer to standard. But that's one of those things. When I go into that NL, I know that there are some people who are wild cards in that room, and so I have to be prepared for just about anything.
Yeah, and you know, before I was in labor this year, you know, as you know, I've done write-ups for the AL and the NL, you know, just as an observer. And I would agree, the AL plays like a very predictable auction in terms of, you know, the player prices and who's bought and what you'd expect pitchers to go for. There aren't really any, you know, a team might dump saves, but there aren't really any wacky strategies where you're like, oh my goodness, like somebody's really all out there. So, you know, I'm looking at what you did, and you know, I have to kind of bring this up right away. This is another player that's kind of in the news with mm-hmm. the 10th player in the auction. You know, there was some pretty liberal spending early. You know, Clayton Kershaw was the first player off the board. He went for 44. You know, there were a few other buys. You bought Max Scherzer for $28. Now, at the time, I'd say that looked like a pretty good buy. He went for less than, well, besides Kershaw, he went for less than Syndergaard. He went for less than Madison Bumgarner. Are you worried about him now, or do you feel like that's still a fair price? Like, how do you feel about that, you know, a little bit out and now that we know what we know about Scherzer?
Now, I'm feeling a little bit better. I mean, he said something the other day that he expects to be ready for opening day, even if he doesn't get the ball in that first game, that he expects to be ready to take his turn at the beginning of the season. So I think things are looking okay. He hasn't had any setbacks as far as I know. He's throwing minor league games in spring training or is scheduled to be doing that. So at this point, you know, that stress fracture in his knuckle is just, he changed his grip a little bit on the fastball, and we heard about that, and that was a little bit different, but it seemed to be, you know, it not bothering him to any degree. So if I'm paying less than the guys paid for Bumgarner and Syndergaard, I'm feeling pretty good about that as having Max Scherzer, who was the most valuable pitcher in all of fantasy last year, as my ace.
Just to jump in here real quick, Steve, were you surprised that the gap between, you mentioned, being prepared for anything, but Scherzer at 28, Bumgarner went for 30, and then Syndergaard for 31, but Kershaw at 44, were you surprised that the gap between those pitchers was as wide as it was?
To some degree, yes, but only because I thought people would bid up a Scherzer a lot more than he was, even with the injury. The 44 for Kershaw, I knew that Derek Hardy likes Kershaw, and he has gotten him in just about every league. He'll get him in probably in Tout Wars as well. But so we knew that was going to be a given, but he had to pay a little bit more than I think even he was comfortable with. So in that case, Kershaw goes up and Scherzer goes down. It makes for an even greater gap between the two. I'm perfectly happy with where I'm sitting. And Derek is probably, okay, but not thrilled with where he's sitting.
Right. I mean, it was a little surprising that nobody pushed a little bit more on a Bumgarner. Even some of the other guys, like Cueto for 22, DeGrom at 20. It just was a little surprising to me, but that's what happens sometimes in these auctions.
Yeah, that was more surprising to me, as some of those other guys didn't come closer to where Scherzer was, because Cueto seemed like a bargain there. Kyle right. Hendricks went for 17. That seemed to be really good. And even some of the other guys that I got later on, Zach Greinke and Kenta Maeda, seemed to be really good prices too. But that's what you get because Doug Dennis is not paying for any of those aces and paying those top dollars. You get depressed prices throughout the pitching staffs. It just wasn't at the top there with Kershaw.
Yep.
Yeah. So you spent, that's a good segue into your pitching, and I kind of wanted to ask about that. So you buy Scherzer, and we all know that, he has the issue with the finger. It's not an arm injury, so it's not quite the same level of concern. Does that affect how you build your pitching staff? Because I'm looking at the rest of the staff. So you mentioned Greinke at 14, which I thought was a good buy. You mentioned Maeda at 13, and I really like him, and a lot of other experts do too. So I was surprised to see him slip there, even with the presence of Doug in the room. And then you backed it up with Michael Wacha, Alex Wood, Dan Straley. That's a really good staff, but did you have an idea, thinking, all right, I got Scherzer, so I have to get a certain type of starter? Or again, did you just go where the value was?
No, I was waiting because I knew that I probably wasn't going to get another high dollar starter in the 20s. So I was just looking to pick off maybe a couple in the mid to into the low teens, perhaps, and just waiting to see what pitchers might come in that range. And Greinke was there, a great last year's bum candidate to bounce back. I think he can, although, his velocity is a little bit down in spring training this year. Hopefully that's just one of those dead arm kinds of things. But, I was looking for guys that I could pick off that were pretty decent. And generally, three solid starters is what I'll look to do, and then just look to have, fill the rest of the staff in with bargains from there on out. And that's kind of how it worked out.
Yeah. And I'll say it's funny. I noticed this in the AL. People really get nervous about the quality of pitching, and I can see why. In the NL, it always seems like there are players who come up from the minors and are off the radar during the season that we can fab and have some value.
Yeah, exactly. Even in, an NL only league or an AL only league, guys appear and you can cycle them in. You're going to have guys go on the DL too. That's the one thing though with labor, as the reserve rules are a little bit more restrictive, so you can't just if a guy is struggling like Greinke did last year, you can't just put him on the bench. You've got to keep him in your lineup and kind of suck it up.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, Tout Wars 2 years ago, I did that to great effect, where I reserved Hellickson, and I think it was Jorge De La Rosa, for his good starts, bad starts, and played that very well. You're right. In labor, if you buy them for a dollar more, it's sink or swim. So a pitcher like someone like John Gray, for example, who went for $9, I heard people saying he's a good buy, and it's like, well, he is, but in Tout Wars, you can stick him down on if he's playing the Cubs in Colorado. You have to cut him in labor, as in Tout. You can be like, yeah, I'm just not going to use him for that start. Yep. I wanted to move to your hitting. So you kind of did what I like to do generally on the hitting side, which is you didn't spend over 30 on a player. And your foundation are three players who are close to 30. In Freddie Freeman at 29, Daniel Murphy at 28 and Starling Marte at 29. I like Marte for the speed. Freeman is somebody who kind of always looks like he's on the brink of superstardom, and he came close to doing it last year. And then you got Murphy. So I want to, you can talk about all three, but I want to ask about Murphy in particular. And I heard you talk about this on your podcast, but just for our audience, in case they didn't hear, just your feelings on him this year in terms of being able to sustain what he did last year, at least produce, $28 worth of value.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, in my mind, he was the, almost as good as Chris Bryant was last year in being essential to his team. He carried the Nationals when Bryce Harper was struggling over the second half and actually part of the first half as well. The thing is, he's been able to change his launch angle and hit for more power, turn on those inside pitches, and he's continued to have such a great contact rate that he's going to hit for average. So you throw on top of that the power skills and the ability to get on base and score runs. Harper's there. I think Harper's going to have a much better season this year, which is going to make Murphy even better. And just the fact that he's in the prime of his career, he's eligible at both second base and first base if I need to shuffle him from one to the other. So I just think that Murphy is one of those cornerstone type players that if you can get him, he's going to give you contributions in pretty much all areas except for stolen bases. And again, like with Freddie Freeman, he's going to give me a nice batting average. Starling Marte as well. I mean, those three guys with all the at-bats that they're going to get and the batting average that they're going to put up, I've got a great base there with which I can, maybe go fishing for some of the, speed-only guys or power-only guys later on in the draft.
Yeah, and it really allowed you to go a little bit later with your outfield with someone like Jay Bruce and Curtis Granderson, who aren't the best batting average guys, to be like, well, you know what? I can do that because I can take a little bit of a batting average hit and go for the power there.
Indeed.
Yep. Steve, were you surprised that Starling Marte only went for 29? Because looking at Mike's bid limits here, he has him down for 32 in an NL only. So were you surprised that you were able to get him at that price? And how much higher would you have been willing to go?
That's a good question. And yes, I was surprised because I've got in my rankings of outfielders in the NL, I've got Harper first and I've got Marte second.
Right.
And I think with some of the injuries that he had last year, I think he's got power upside this year, and he still ran last year. I think he's going to run even more. So that, to me, seemed like a real surprise, and I was very happy nobody said 30.
So Steve and I are going to be fighting over him in tout is what I'm hearing here.
I think we fight over a lot of players, Mike.
Yeah.
We did in the AL, too.
Yeah, we can get to that. So your end game in the end. I mean, I mentioned Bruce and Granderson, but something that you did that I also like is you got players, on the back end who, if you're in a mixed league, that you don't want them, or you're like, oh, whatever. But Freddy Galvis, Adonis Garcia, a few guys who really are going to like get at bats and grind, and then you got three guys in, Roman Quinn, Ahmed Rosario and Corey Spangenberg, different players. Spangenberg will probably be on the bench. But Rosario and Quinn, what kind of impact are you expecting from them this year?
I don't know that I'm really expecting a whole lot, to tell you the truth. I think at that point in the draft, there were a few spots left and basically all scrubs. So, I mean, you can get and Spangenberg is probably one of those scrubs. Maybe he gets a little bit of playing time, steals a few bases here and there. I think that's what I was just looking for to fill that middle infield spot. But no, with Quinn and Rosario, I think they're actually guys that do have a little bit of upside if the playing time materializes. And that's what I was looking for late, looking to get, if Quinn comes in and he got a little bit of action last year at the end of the season, good base stealer, good base runner. So if he gets in, he can put up some of those counting stats. And Rosario, complete wild card, got him for a buck. And
he's
of
a buck.
The $1 players. Yeah. Of the $1 players available, what I'd like to do is I like to get those minor leaguers in the actual auction portion of the draft because, you can send them down and because they're in the minor leagues, they can be down. And then when they do come up or if they do come up, generally they're going to come up and stay up. So you're not really losing anything. Whereas if you got him in the reserve round, the benefit of those $0 players is you can move them up and down and up and down and up and down whenever you want. That just doesn't seem to apply for a guy like Rosario or Quinn for that matter.
Yeah, and we've seen with players like Rosario, the example I'm thinking of is Addison Russell 2 years ago. We've seen talented players like that tend to defeat the timetables and find a way up earlier, even if in March or April it doesn't look like there's a spot. So yeah, I know I'm a Mets fan, so I'm kind of biased, but I really like the Rosario pick. At a buck, you just have nothing to lose. And you know, just to before we move off your team, I really like your team. Like I always like your teams, but you know, a lot of balance. The pitching's good. You have Ramos. You have one closer in Ramos, but you handcuffed him with Brad Ziegler, who looks like the likely, you know, setup there. So, you know, it's a tough league, and you know, it's always difficult in the preseason to know who the favorite is. But you know, in terms of it, looks to me like in terms of doing what you wanted to do, you have a balanced team that has a good shot.
Yeah, I think so. I liked Derek Van Riper's team. I think he was the one that came out on top in the Draft Wizard Fantasy Pros projections, but I was right up there, so I was happy with that.
Yeah, I didn't do the NL. I only did the AL. So before we move off the NL, I do want to ask you alluded to this before, just because I think this will help our listeners. So Doug Dennis, so just to let everyone know, he spends $30 on his entire pitching staff every year. He spends $230 on offense. And you know it's coming. You know, it's not like he does a strategy sneakily and then afterwards is like, you know, I did this crazy strategy. Yeah. Is there a way you adjust for that, or you just know it's coming, so you're like, okay, I'm going to move some hitter prices up and you know, going to move some pitcher prices down?
Yeah, I tend to try and make moves early to get ahead of what happens generally is those lesser players in the middle of the draft and towards the end kind of get bumped up in terms of going for more than they maybe should have. And so I will look very carefully in the early going. And I did this. Freeman was one of the first, I don't know, 25 or 30 guys out. Starling Marte was one of the first guys out. And Murphy was a little bit later on, if I remember correctly. But I try and look for bargains right off the top or guys that are kind of going at my max bid price so that I know that if I can get those guys locked in, then I can hunt for value elsewhere and in the pitching staff, because sometimes you can get left out. And we saw, you know, Josh Bell go for $19 later on and some other guys that were really expensive relative to what they probably should have gone for.
Yeah. First base in particular, I, you know, just sitting there watching the beginning, you know, I think it was Freeman, Joey Votto at 29. And I mean, even Goldschmidt at 38, you know, which is certainly a par price. I like that a lot better than a number of the first base prices in the middle, you know, where you're kind of like, you know, you mentioned Bell, you know, Brandon Bell for 22, you know, great player in real life, but in fantasy, you know, San Francisco kind of knocks him down a little bit. You know, getting Freeman there was really a big, to me, was like, oh, Eric Thames at 22 is another one. Like getting Freeman at 29 early was really a buy for me.
Yep. And that's kind of what I was trying to do. So mission accomplished there.
Yeah. So before I move off, the last question for the NL is there anybody out there that you didn't get that you thought was a value that you were like, oh, you know, I wish I got this guy, or it was a good, you know, I know a lot of this is just hindsight and, you know, we know how fast these auctions go, but was there someone out there like, oh, I wish I got him?
I was bidding back and forth with Eric Carabel on Jed Jerko of all people, and you know, the fact that I did have that batting average cushion, and I was looking to fill that middle infield spot that eventually went to Spangenberg for $3, but I went 12, and I think Eric went 13 on Jerko, and I just that kind of power potential in the middle infield I thought would really work well for my team. And if I do had, you know, or if I do have a weakness that I think I need to improve on, it's getting a little bit more power. That would have done it. So that was the one for me that I wish I'd maybe pushed that a little bit more to see exactly how far he was willing to go.
Yeah, that's and again, it's always tough because it goes so quickly. You know, it's not like a home league auction where you're sitting there and they're like, you know, can I take a timeout? It just moves. So the AL, and the AL was the one I was in, and, you know, for listeners of the show, we talked about what I did last week, but, you know, I wanted to get, you know, it's always great to get a second person's impression of an auction and hear how it went. So you know, we'll kind of start with, you know, in the AL with again with your team, you know, same thing. Is it the same in the AL as the NL? Like, is it just kind of get the best value in terms of the plan, or is there something different that you do for the different auction?
No, again, I'm one of your more boring guests, I think, when it comes to talking about draft strategy, Mike. It's just, you know, I look for to get a solid foundation. I'll generally, one thing that I do is I try and I tell myself going in, you know, be patient, don't jump at the first thing you see. And I end up doing something like I did in the NL and get three guys in the first 20 or so. But I really think that that's, you know, you have your spots and your slots and what you think you want to pay for them. And then once you start building your roster, you certainly have to, I have to be flexible because, you know, once I start getting guys and bidding on players and winning them, then I can shift money from, you know, corner infield to middle infield or to the outfield. Or if I save someone pitching, I can shift some of the extra money over to the outfield or something like that. So that's basically how I go about pretty much every draft, is just have a basic idea of what I want to pay and roll with the good values that pop up.
Yeah, and I had to do that a little bit like on the later end. George, I'm sorry, George, do you have something?
Yeah, just real quick, Steve, you bought Alex Bregman for $24, and I really like what Bregman did. He obviously had that really tough stretch when he first got called up last year, but he was pretty incredible down the stretch late in the season. What is it about Bregman that you like so much? Because I know another one of your favorites that we've talked about in the past with you, Todd Frazier, went for a couple bucks less. So what is it that you really like about Alex Bregman this year?
Well, the one thing that I like about Alex Bregman is he's Larry Schechter's nephew. And the fact that he was bidding on Bregman and I was pushing Larry a little bit, and I still like Bregman. So, I mean, it wasn't the fact that if I was going to 22 that I didn't want to pay 22 if I ended up getting him. But then Larry went to 23, I think. And so I went to 24. And this was, again, it was early. And this, you know, probably my weakness is I like to go ahead and get involved early. And Larry didn't jump at 25. And so all of a sudden I was like, oh, well, I guess I'm going to get him then. So I do like Bregman. I don't think I like him as much, though, at 24, especially when I see, you know, that Adrian Beltre goes for 24. And, you know, as you said, Frazier went for a couple bucks less. And Kyle Seager went for 24.
Yeah.
So in that respect, I kind of overpaid a little bit. But again, the upside is there. He could have a fantastic year and earn every single one of those dollars.
Yeah, it's one of those auction dynamics things because he came out so early. It's just, you know, what happens. I also like the Dan Vogelbach pick. Mike can back me up on this. One of my personal favorites this year. I really liked him as well.
BP guys in general love Vogelbach.
That was a polarizing pick too. I know the Fangraphs guys, they didn't like that pick at all.
Well, the BP guys like him, so we'll see who's right.
Very good. I'm hoping you guys.
Yeah. So
you're on board.
Yeah. Besides Bregman, the other guys, the big buys you got were after Bregman. You bought a couple players, but you sat back for a little while, and then you got Nelson Cruz. You got JD Martinez, and you and I were fighting over him. And this is one pick after I got Kevin Kiermaier. You got Lorenzo Cain. So really good power base with those three players. I think all three of them are going to produce there. You know, Cruz, I just believe in him until, you know, eventually can't do it. He just hits 35, 40 home runs every year. Do you think you have enough speed, or is that something that you identify at this point as a little bit of a weakness?
No, I definitely do not have enough. And the fact that I went to Kane, and what I was thinking there is that I'd get somebody that can help me kind of across the board that has a little bit of power, but is going to give me a nice total in stolen bases. And then I'd pick up some other guys later. And those other guys just never really materialized. I was looking for the Jerod Dysons. I went, you know, pretty heavily on him, and he got out of my price range. I would love to have had Byron Buxton, but he got up a little bit too high as well. Both Buxton went for 18, Dyson went for 16, Rajai Davis went for 17. So you can see after I'd bought all three of those guys, you know, those three outfielders, then I couldn't really spend another double-digit guy. You know, I couldn't really pay that much for an outfielder. because I had other needs to address. So at that point, I really loved getting the two guys, the power guys in Martinez and Nelson Cruz. I thought they were underpriced, to tell you the truth. And getting those guys, I was very happy with. Happy with Kane, and I thought I'd be able to supplement him with some speed, even in the middle infield. That didn't materialize, so that's where I ended up with. But no big deal, I guess.
No, it makes you feel any better that there's a lot of teams that have the same problem. I mean, I'm kind of in the same boat after Kiermaier, and you know, I have Alcides Escobar, and I'm hoping it's a 20 to 25 steal year, you know, as opposed to like a 15 steal year. But I'm kind of in the same boat. So the good news is you might be able to get like 5 or 6 points in the category just because so many teams are in the same position. Like it's a weird year for speed, particularly in the AL, you know, compared to the NL, where there's all these guys like at the bottom who run a little bit.
Right. And yeah, the Roman Quinns of the world that you can take a chance on, and you know, you could hit on a 20 steal guy. I don't see too many of those in the AL.
Yeah. Well, the guys that were there, like Ben Revere and Malik Smith, they went for almost $10. And it, you know, it's kind of the thing where it's like, okay, I get it. You know, I get an AL only that if Malik Smith steals 25 to 30 bases, he could be worth, you know, he could be Dyson last year. He could be worth like 15 to 20, but you could also wind up with nothing, like just a player who sits in the minors all year.
Yeah. Yep, guy like Roger Davis went for 17 as well. So speed was expensive, and I've seen that a lot this year as well. How do you feel about your pitching staff, Steve? Because you have obviously Corey Kluber there to anchor it. Danny Duffy's a great number two if he comes back and pitches like he did all of last year until September. And then you have you know, the closer in David Robertson as well. It's a pretty good looking staff. How do you feel about it?
Yeah, it wasn't a bad staff. Again, I moved early on Kluber and got him locked in. I figured he might go even more than 29, but that was fine. He's the number one pitcher on my board in the AL, so I was fine with him going a dollar less than Yu Darvish and Chris Sale. And then Duffy I like, and I think you know, he should be pretty solid this year, getting a full season in the rotation, and you know, having worked his way into that spot. And plus Kansas City generally pretty good on defense, pretty good park for pitchers. So that was a plus. And then I was just kind of fishing for values again. After those two guys, Eduardo Rodriguez with David Price's injury, looks like he's in a little bit better shape to be in the Boston Red Sox starting rotation. Irvin Santana, you know, those bargains, $4 for Santana, $6 for Rodriguez, $3 for Francisco Liriano.
I'm
glad Brett's not here because he would yell at me about not letting you get Liriano for $3 and buying Tillman for $4. So yeah, you can yell at me, George.
It was a bad move, Mike. Steve totally made the right call here.
Well, Tillman came up a lot earlier, and had I honestly known not just Liriano, but a lot of the prices later on the pitchers are going to be that low, I would have let Tillman go.
I'm shocked people aren't valuing Liriano higher. He's still striking guys out, and if the command isn't atrocious, he's pretty good for $3 in it only. That's fine.
Yeah, and I had some really good control guys too. You know, Kluber doesn't walk many guys at all. Duffy is pretty decent, and so Liriano's walk rate, I can absorb that a little bit, and still be. I think the projections had me in the top one or two in ERA and WHIP both. So you know, I can have those high strikeout and sort of elevated ratio guys.
Chris Devensky is another good strikeout to walk guy as well. So he's great control guy too.
Yeah. Yeah. I was very happy. Yeah.
And I think something besides Devensky, you know, so you did another handcuff here, you know, and unlike in the NL with Ramos and Ziegler, you paid more for it. You know, so you got David Robertson and Nate Jones for, I think it was a combined 22. So what was the thinking behind that? Is that Robertson's a trade risk? Is it tied into how good Jones's ERA and WHIP are, or was it a combination of those things?
Well, it's sort of formulated from the prices that all the other closers were going for earlier, because, you know, Chapman went for 23 and Britton went for 21, and then Edwin Diaz went for 19, Ken Giles 18. So when you're starting to pay, you know, those prices, I backed away from those guys and was looking to try and get a Kelvin Herrera or somebody like that. And he ends up going for 17. So I'm just at that point, I'm a little wary of getting into the bidding for closers. And when Robertson came up, I was able to, you know, the light bulb goes on and says, okay, well, here's an opportunity. How about getting Robertson now and then looking to get Nate Jones later. And the fact that the White Sox have talked trade and all that sort of stuff, that there's a possibility that if Robertson does get traded, as long as I have Nate Jones, I'm willing to pay. He's going to have great ratios anyway.
Right.
And I'll have the closer in waiting if he does get traded. And then I have two closers.
Yeah, so I got kind of the thought. Yeah, I got Sam Dyson at 12-1 before you got Robertson. And when Robertson came up and I saw what he went for, it's not that I had regret, but I'm like, I might have rather had Robertson. Like, it was almost a coin flip for me with those two prices. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Well, and when Dyson goes off the board, sorry, George, when Dyson goes off the board, that makes it even more urgent for me to get me a closer who's actually closing. So that's where the price, you know, I was definitely in on that.
Yeah, the runs are always interesting in these leagues in terms of how that goes. I'm sorry, George, do you have a question before I moved on?
No, I had a terrible joke. Unfortunately, these auctions don't happen in a vacuum. So there
oh,
we
man.
Go. Sorry.
So
I had to do it.
You mentioned a couple of these guys. I really liked your end game on the hitting side and the AL, Steve. Like, so you got Wilson Ramos for $5, and it was early, but just based on the price, you know, it was kind of an end game play. You got Jed Lowrie for $3, who, you know, I know the jokes with him, you know, he's already hurt, he's gonna get hurt tomorrow, but, you know, as long as he's playing, he's a really solid buy. And you got Luis Valbuena for $2, who some people think he's gonna steal a lot of bats that way from CJ Cron, but even if he doesn't, he should play enough, you know, when he did this with the Astros, to provide value. And, you know, you got Brandon Guyer for $1. So these guys aren't all starters, but in an only, they can really provide value and propel you. And I suspect one of them is going to really, probably Valbuena or Guyer, is really going to exceed the price you got them at.
Well, Valbuena was a direct response to you getting Yulieski Gurriel, because that was the guy that I wanted. And you knew that we were going to discuss this. So I had that corner spot open, wide open, and I love getting a guy who Gurriel, you know, eligible at third base, but is going to play first, so he's going to have the dual eligibility there. And to get that kind of a guy in the corner spot really helps your roster flexibility, which, you know, in this league where it's so deep that you've got to have guys with position flexibility should somebody get injured or something. So after I lost out on him, there was still somebody that I had circled on my sheet, Valbuena, who was eligible both first and third and can play both of those. So I said, okay, that's who I'll look at. And it was late enough that nobody really had a lot of discretionary funds to spend. And so he was only $2. I had budgeted him for, you know, maybe the $8 that I paid for Vogelbach. I was going to pay that for Valbuena and then just see who I could get for $2 later on. But yeah, I thought that was a very fortunate thing that he fell into my lap there. And the other guys, you know, I took Tyler Naquin also on the Indians. So I figure, you know, Brandon Guyer is worth a $1 flyer just in case something happens and the Indians outfield gets thinned out a little bit and Naquin doesn't get as many at bats or if he gets benched or something. So that was the thinking there. And Lowrie just fit that middle infield spot and he was cheap enough.
Yeah, so, you know, again, similar thing, you know, so the projections, I think the one you were referencing had you finishing second, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and I ran the HQ just to run something more neutral than the, you know, than Picote and the PFM, and that had you finishing third. So it looks like based on these, you know, early projections that once again, you have a pretty solid team, and, you know, we never know, so it's you know, just one of those things. So before we move off of the AL and I guess kind of end, because we've gone, like, you know, pretty much close to the time we thought we'd go, Jose Altuve for $45. So you know, I wanted to talk to you about this. So he's the first player called out and, you know, he the bidding goes quickly. And, you know, I think we all agree that's a lot of money. But something that's kind of interesting about Altuve, and this is particularly true in an only, he's actually out-earned Mike Trout, who went for $42 two of the last 3 years, at least by my calculation. So while I think that Altuve was certainly more expensive than he should have been, I'm not necessarily sure that it was as, you know, off the wall as some people think. You know, I just want to get your impressions on this and what your feeling was about that price at the time. And now that you've had a little bit more time afterward to digest it.
No, well, I agree, Mike. And the one thing that I noticed in going back and doing some research for the write-up that I did for the AL Labor is that last year, Larry Schechter had Jose Altuve on his roster, and he won the championship. The year before, I had Jose Altuve on my roster, and I won the championship. So Altuve has been a big portion of the strategy of the eventual champions the last 2 years. And I looked at in some of the surveys that I'm collecting that I get from everybody, I ask, you know, how you felt you did, what was your strategy? Was there anybody that you, you know, felt like you got shafted out of and that sort of thing. And you'd be surprised that at least I think three or four different people wrote in that their strategy going in was to get stolen bases and batting average and targeting Jose Altuve. So as it turned out, and I was on SiriusXM the day of the draft even, and they were asked me, you know, well, who do you think you might get? And who did I say? But I said, well, I'd like to build my team around Jose Altuve. So I think he's certainly not a secret anymore. And the fact that he has returned that kind of value and helped in all the categories, plus the power spike last year, it's really not a shocker that Jose Altuve is, in this format at least, just as valuable, it looks like, as Mike Trout is.
Yeah. That's one of those things like where the price, there's a sticker shock. And yeah, I was one of those people. I was hoping to get him for like $40 or $41. And, you know, just when everybody has the same idea, that's what happens in an auction, is that somebody's like, you know what, I don't care what the price is or what it does to my team later, you know, I'm going to get him. And, you know, I think we talked a little bit about speed, but just to kind of talk less about your team and more in general, speed in the AL, just to emphasize this, is just really, you know, at a premium. Like Jared Dyson was certainly not cheap. You know, I mentioned some of the lower end guys. George mentioned Raj Davis. Less about labor since we talked about this already, but more in general. Like if you're doing another AL auction, or, you know, I know you're in the NL side in Taup, but if you're doing an AL auction later on or giving advice to someone, what would be your advice on speed for somebody going into an AL auction or setting this year?
I think I would look at players who may not be the high stolen base totals, but to kind of accumulate steals as you go. You know, kind of get guys like Todd Frazier, for instance, you know, who will steal 10 to 15 bases at third base, and kind of collect guys like that so that you don't have to pay the top dollars for, you know, the Dysons or the Davises or even, you know, Altuve is kind of in a different ballpark, but the guys that maybe don't do as much and don't score as many runs or drive in as many, but do get a lot of stolen bases. I think the incremental approach, and maybe more so, if I were to do another AL draft at this point or an AL auction, I would look for a lot more of those guys, because it creeps up on you and all of a sudden they're gone. And that's exactly what happened to me in labor, is I'm looking up and like, oh, well, I got Lorenzo Cain. He's a good stolen base guy. Oh, and I don't really have anybody else. And so you end up, you know, I end up paying $8 or $9 for Jorge Polanco and hope he steals, you know, 15 bases or something to at least keep me competitive.
Well, the PFM and Pecota do love Polanco, so hopefully that's another case where Baseball Prospectus is right. So my final question before we go, so, you know, as you invited me and Clay Link from RotoWire, two new owners in labor on the AL side, and labor doesn't have nearly as much turnover as Tout Wars or some of the other expert tilts. So my question for you, you know, seeing two new owners, and I know we've competed against each other in Tout, how does that change things for you, both preparing and how the, you know, when the auction's going along? Is there anything you do, or again, is it just a matter of you just kind of go as, you know, I guess take it as it goes?
Well, it was interesting. I think you and Clay kind of balanced each other out to where there wasn't a huge difference in you guys versus last year, because Clay was really aggressive early, and he was the guy that got Jose Altuve, you know, and went to 45 and followed that plan. And you kind of laid back and waited and may have been, if not the last person, maybe the
Laura
next
was,
to last
Laura
person
was
to
one,
get their first player.
Yeah, Laura was one player after me. We were right next to each other at the beginning. And then at the end, or not the end, but in the middle, was me and Dave Adler of Baseball HQ, had over 100. And, you know, I don't know if you could hear it, but where I was sitting, I could hear the serious guys talking. And mm-hmm. I was a story for a while with, like, you know, when's Mike going to spend his money? And, you know, George knows from listening to me talk about this, and, you know, you probably do too, which is like, well, if I budgeted correctly, I'm going to spend my money. I'm just going to do it later. And then sure enough, you know, I had a big run. I think it was like 5 or 6 players within like 10 or 11 calls where I just pretty much spent more than half the money I'd left.
Yeah, it's, and I know because having played with you, it wasn't ever really a concern about whether you'd find the guys to spend or you know, to spend on. I know when I did my first labor auction, I wanted to get in there and I did not want to get caught with money at the end of the game. I wanted to be able to spend, and then I'd go ahead and get, you know, $2 and $3 players and fill out my roster at the end, no problem. But I did not want to get caught having too much money and maybe leaving some on the table, because that just terrified me.
Yeah,
so I don't know if Clay was in the same boat. But I know that he did go out and spend a lot of money pretty early.
I did that in my first tout auction way back in 2010. I bought like Pujols and Hanley. This is NL only for like 40 a piece, and I bought Votto for 28. And there was somebody else I bought like in the 20s, and like people were looking at me. You know, and that was a year before you joined tout. People were looking at me like, "What are you doing?" And it's that same instinct for your first auction. You know, I was on Clay's show this past weekend, and I was telling him that. I was saying, you know, it's a normal instinct in that first auction to spend, because you are better off like spending all your money and not having people look at you at the end like, you know, what the heck did you do? You know, you spent $17, you know, on Jorge Polanco, for example, or you left $15 on the table. The former of overspending on a few stars isn't nearly as awkward as the other option.
Yeah, and so, yeah, I think you guys balanced each other out to the point where, you know, okay, it just seems like a normal auction. So there's not really a whole lot you can do to prepare, I don't think, just other than just be aware of what that person's tendency may be once they start bidding. You know, are they involved a lot or a little? And I think you can't really prepare for that ahead of time. You just have to kind of figure it out on the fly again.
Yep.
Yeah, and we'll see what happens. I mean, it looks to me like the AL is going to be very tight. Yeah, Larry is Schechter, not a surprise. You know, he's great at this. Is projected first in nearly every system I've seen. Mm-hmm. But that's why, you know, it's why we play the season. I'm sure he'll be up there, but I have a feeling that it's going to be a tight race. You know, last year was really exciting. I know it was you, Tristan Cockcroft of ESPN, and Larry, like, pretty much down to the last, like, weekend or two.
Yeah, and Tim Heaney also was involved in that, and it ended up being Tristan and Larry going down to the final day, the final games, and the dreaded, the guy who will live in infamy, Jeffrey Marte, hitting the home run that put Larry over the top. So, again, it's always somebody like that. You know, it's never it's never somebody throwing a no-hitter to put you over the top. It's always somebody that you never even think of.
Yep. So on that note, Steve, I just want to thank you so much for appearing. This is always it's great to have you on. It's great to discuss labor. George might not agree, but I could do this for like another hour. Just tell everybody when the Leviathan, as it's called in the industry, is coming out and what else you're working on right now.
Yeah, I'm throwing all my efforts into getting everything for that in place. It comes out March 22nd, which is next Wednesday. So it will be on newsstands in the regular issue of Sports Weekly. So if you're a subscriber, you'll get it. You don't have to make a special pilgrimage to the grocery store or the 7-Eleven or whatever. And that's basically what I'm doing day and night for the next several days. Otherwise, you can catch me on Twitter, too. I'm still around there every so often and answering some questions at Steve A. Gardner. And definitely come to USA Today, fantasy.usatoday.com, and see everything from me and some of the other guys that we have from our USA Today Sports Network.
Yeah, it's definitely been a pleasure, Steve. Thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, thanks again, Steve. Really appreciate it.
Hey, thanks, guys. Appreciate.
Awesome.
Yeah, appreciate you having me. And like Mike, I can sit there and talk labor for another hour, but we'll save everybody's eardrums and give George some time to do some other stuff.
Yeah, exactly. We'll be sure to have you on again at some point during the season. So thanks again, Steve. And we'll take a quick break, and we'll come back and wrap up the show here. We'll cover some current events and some other stuff, and then we'll get out of here. So we'll be right back. And we're back. Thanks once again to Steve Gardner for joining us here tonight. Always fun to talk to Steve. He's one of the best in the industry. So we're going to talk about some current events because there has been a lot going on in the world of baseball right now. Spring training, as well as the World Baseball Classic in full swing. Mike, have you been checking out any of the WBC so far?
Yeah, a little bit. I've been, at least when I'm awake, I've been watching it. I haven't been getting up super early to watch, but it's really exciting. I caught a lot of the action this weekend. It's one of those things that took time to get used to, it being in the middle of spring training, but now that I'm into it, I'm a big fan, and I'm glad that the tournament exists.
Yeah, I realized it was like 2 a.m., and I was watching like the Netherlands take on Japan, and I was like, what am I doing right now? But the games have been really entertaining, and I really liked those. We actually did get one Twitter question. It's from our buddy Sean P. Galvin on Twitter. He asked us what, if anything, fantasy-wise can be taken from watching the WBC. And for me, like, I don't think there's a lot. Like, just like Marcus Stroman looks great, and that's awesome. But I liked Marcus Stroman already. So, I mean, it's not – I'm not going to, you know, bump him up in my rankings or anything like that. What are some of your takeaways from it, if anything?
I have the same feeling that there's not much. Like, Andrew Miller struggled, but then, you know, you heard later he wasn't throwing at full speed, and the Cleveland had asked him to kind of take it, you know, ramp it down a little bit. So it's, you know, it's a higher level than spring training, obviously, but for a number of the players, particularly the professionals, they're not necessarily going full bore, you know, outside of Drew Butera and that really weird play. That's the one thing with the WBC you want to watch for. You want to watch for injuries and just kind of be mindful, you know, and it's a little late now, but if you had an early draft or auction and you knew someone was playing a WBC, it's just something to keep in mind with the player's price and all that. But yeah, for me, there's not really much with WBC that I take into account just because it's not really indicative of what happens during the season. Like, if you think back to last WBC in 2013, was there a takeaway like from that anyone can even remember for fantasy? Like, I don't think so.
No, I haven't seen anything really significant. But
I remember Hanley got hurt. Like, that's the one thing I remember about that WBC.
Yeah, that was a shortstop Hanley back in the day, right? I mean.
Yeah. By the way, shortstop Hanley is something in like 20 or 30 years that people who are like 25 or 30 and looking back at his career are going to be like, what? He played shortstop?
Yeah, pretty much. So speaking of injuries, we do have a couple of things here we need to hit on since we last spoke a week ago. It's been a pretty rough week for the Rockies. I mean, they nailed Pi Day on Twitter, but pretty much everything else has been a disaster so far for them this spring. We touched on the Ian Desmond injury a little bit with Steve earlier, and I think it is worth bringing up what you're going to do with Desmond as far as your next updates on the bid limits, because you have him right now at $28 in a mixed league. We have him as a top 10 outfielder right at the top of the four-star tier. So if he's going to be out at least a month, it sounds like he's not going to be back till May. How far would you downgrade him overall, and what are you doing with your bid limits now? Because he is a guy you're going to have to consider in the NL tout coming up here.
Yeah, and I still haven't decided on the bid limit because I have until Friday, till the next publication date. But right. If I were having an auction like right now, tonight or tomorrow, you have to drop him at least $7 or $8. You know, and that's a quarter of the season, and that might sound like a lot, but as Steve mentioned before, you know, you're looking at a recovery time, you know, you're looking at a point where he won't even be swinging. And the other thing with hand injuries, some players tend to recover, they get the power back, they're fine. Other players that first year back from the hand injury, they struggle. Now, that's usually more when you break the hamate bone, and I don't think that's what Desmond did. but it's just still something to watch. It can really mess with your swing. So that $7 I mentioned, that's a minimum I'd cut him off. And that might be conservative. I might drop him a little more just because it's not I don't want a part of Desmond, but I hate buying players or drafting players that start on the DL. Like you're committing to a month of no stats. And in a league like Tout Wars, which is an NL only, that there's no replacement. So you're going to have a hole in your roster to start the season.
Tom Murphy of the Rockies, catcher, was expected to split time with Tony Wolters. He's out with a fractured right forearm. He's going to be out at least a month. They're saying 4 to 6 weeks. He's probably only someone who was on the radar in deeper mixed leagues or NL onlys, but I think you can kind of cross him off. I mean, if you want to throw like a dollar at him at the end of a draft and stash him, maybe. But he's kind of a power-only guy. We talked about him a lot in the catcher preview. I have to bring up this David Price thing again, Mike, because there was a quote. Evan Drellick of the Boston Herald had it in his piece on Monday. Said, it's a quote from David Price. He said, quote, "They, Dr. Andrews and Dr. Elitrash, said if I was 22 or 23, they'd have told me to go have surgery." That's not what you want to hear from David Price. And I just have to wonder, can you draft him at all at this point? Because there's something going on here, and it feels inevitable.
Unless you're in an AL only or like an 18 to 20 team mixed league, like in 15 team mix, like if labor mix were happening today, he's a back end guy. He's a guy you're taking, I'd say, somewhere between the 20th and 23rd round as your last pitcher. And in a 12 team mix, yeah, I depending on the DL rules, I either don't want to touch him or he's my last pick. There's just too much going on right now where if you look at pitching injuries, which are always unpredictable and always you want to assume the worst, if you're looking for positives, what you want to see is a few things. You want to see a timetable. You want to see, like, this pitcher will be throwing by such and such a date. You know, he'll be going on a rehab by such and such a date. Right. You know, we talked earlier about Max Scherzer. Like, Max Scherzer, I am concerned about him and maybe a little bit more than Steve is, but Scherzer, the Nationals are being pretty upfront about what he's doing. Like when he hasn't, you know, gone to pitch in a spring training game, they've been pretty upfront. They've been saying that, well, he's not going to start opening day, but it looks like he's going to take it the first turn of the rotation. You know, if he doesn't take that turn, he's going to take the second turn. With Price, it's very nebulous. Like the only news we have, he's going to start the season on DL, and it's like, well, what does that mean? Does that mean he's going to start throwing, you know, in mid-April? Is he going to start throwing in mid-May? We just don't know. And I cut him down to 14 in the last update. There's a good chance for the AL only people, I'm going to cut that bid in half, which I know sounds severe, but I don't want any part of Price, you know, with the exception of league where you can get him as a keeper and keep him the following year.
See, there's no great comp either. I've heard the Masahiro Tanaka comp thrown out there that, well, he had elbow ligament damage and he pitched through it and he was fine. But, you know, with David Price, if there's an issue in season, they're going to have to shut him down. He says he's fine now and he's not feeling any pain and there's no swelling, but if he has an issue mid-season, they're just going to shut him down for good. There's no way they can risk ramping him back up again. So that's my big concern. I would not want to own David Price this year. This is just it seems to me really bad. There was another scare with another ace caliber starter in Carlos Carrasco. Just tonight, as we record this, Jordan Bastian of MLB.com reported that he had an MRI, which revealed no structural damage. He's going to miss one start this spring. He had a little bit of swelling in his right elbow. We already knew that Carrasco was one of the riskiest guys in the top, you know, 10 to 15 starting pitchers this year, but this feels to me like it really amplifies the risk if there's an elbow issue going into the year with Carrasco.
Yeah,
he's already had Tommy John, too, right?
Well, he's had Tommy John, and the other thing with him is that he's – I know they haven't been arm injuries. Last year was a hamstring, and he had an injury at the end of the season. He just always seems to miss time. And, yeah, the combination of everything going on with him, we don't know yet. You know, we're just getting this news now. I want to be cautious. Like inflammation right. Sometimes is just that. And, you know, it's rest in 7 to 10 days or 14 days, and the guy comes back. But even if it's 7 to 10 days at this point in spring training, even with the later start of the season, it's like I'm going to bump him down like a couple bucks, like even just right now at this moment. And know, again, a lot of this, we're almost where we're with Price, like, coming into labor, which is, if you're buying Carrasco and he's your ace, you might want to reconsider that. Like, if he's your number two, it's like, okay, well, you've got somebody in front of him.
Right.
But, you know, it's a different, like, calculation.
Yeah, I'd probably move him down to the top of the four-star tier. I think we had him in the fives when our rankings came out at BP.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't push him any further than that because we don't know that there's actually anything wrong. This could just be, just swelling, and it's normal. Who knows? So we'll see. The only other stuff we had, AJ Pollock has a groin injury. Are you concerned at all about that? Because, AJ Pollock, again, I don't want to go through this.
I'm not concerned about the injury, but it's similar to Carrasco in that he's somebody coming off of another injury. I know he played last year after the fact. I have that discount built into my bids, though. He's somebody I probably won't get. So I look at it like, well, you know, it's too bad about him, but I suspect it will be, you know, I think I have him at 24 and only. And I've seen him going, you know, in labor, and I'm trying to look at this now because I toggled back to
While you look that up, like, I haven't come close to getting AJ Pollock anywhere. I don't care what type of draft it is. There's always someone who likes him more than me and believes in the 2015 rebound all the way.
So he went for 27, and my bid limit's 24, and he went to Steve Moyer of something called Yakker Tech.
I like it.
So essentially, I won't go over 25 for Pollock, and that pretty much means that I'm not getting him anywhere.
All right, last injury notes here. Anthony DeSclafani does not sound good. You can probably cross him off. Sonny Gray is a lat strain. He's going to be out for a while. You can't draft either of these guys, right, in a mixed league?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. Last couple of things, and we'll wrap up here. Spring training. Obviously, there's not a whole lot you can take away from it, but have you changed your opinion on any players this spring? As we go along over the course of time, as you do drafts, as you watch more stuff, all of our opinions change, and I have one example of this, but is there anyone for you that you've had your opinion change on a little bit over the last couple of weeks?
Well, the short answer is no. So to give a little bit longer of an answer, I was taught with spring training to kind of look at the last week, because everything before that, the veterans are just trying to get in shape. They're trying not to get hurt. You know, they're working on things. You know, a lot of pitchers, for example, are just throwing fastballs, or they're not throwing much off speed stuff. And a lot of them say it's like, well, it's that last week or two when I'm trying to amp up. So no, I haven't really had a big like epiphany with anybody. So that's my philosophy with spring training. What I do tend to look at, you know, if a pitcher has had a control problem in the past and he's got a low walk rate, that's something I kind of look at. Or for hitters, if they're showing a better batting eye, if they're walking more and it was not a guy who was walking in the past, that's something I look at. But I haven't seen a player like that yet who jumps out. And the same thing for spring stats. I really don't look at them until I see about maybe 40 or 50 at-bats.
Yeah, I don't care at all about spring training stats. But, like, I look at pitcher velocity, fastball velocity. I think that's something you should pay attention to. But other than that, not really. Injuries and playing time as far as roles and how whether or not a starter's going to be in the rotation or not. That type of stuff is what I pay attention to. But I mostly ignore everything that happens in the spring. I think you can only get yourself into trouble by believing in, 3 weeks worth of at-bats for a hitter or a couple good outings for a pitcher. So I just think the reason I bring this up is because I had an interesting discussion about Jarrell Cotton on Twitter, and this was the subject of another podcast I was listening to that Brett was on, and I liked Cotton a lot coming into the off season. He was a guy, because of the change up and the success he'd had with it, I didn't think he was going to be anything great, but I liked him a bit. And now I see that a lot of owners have been really aggressive on him in drafts that I've been in, and I have not come close to getting him. And I'm really kind of now down on him because I think people are getting way too crazy as far as investing in him. So I don't know. Jarrell Cotton to me is like that guy who stands out to me negatively, that I'm like, I liked him a lot, but now I can't see myself getting him.
Yeah, You know, you brought this up with Juan Ocasio, and you were, yeah, not that I was all in on him, but you were the voice of reason last year, and that's a lot of what this comes back to, which is Jarrell Cotton a useful, like, third or fourth starter for the A's? Yeah.
Yeah.
Is he more than that based on the stuff? Like, I just don't think so, and some of it is that teams aren't pushing as hard in spring training, and what compounds that, too, is this year in particular, the WBC, a lot of players who normally Cotton would be, you know, facing are off in the WBC. So it's a different environment in a spring when you have this tournament going on. You know, maybe that's the takeaway too. You know, when you want to look at spring performances even less this year than you did in the past.
Yeah, I think Brett's point on Cotton was more from a dynasty standpoint, but just that there are tons of guys who can do exactly what he does. There's not a lot separating him from 40 or 50 other guys in that sort of back-end rotation starter kind of mold. And you brought up Nicasio, but Nicasio, like, to me last year, he had that great spring training. Didn't he have one start where he struck out, like, 12 guys in five innings or something? I mean, he was a guy who always had platoon issues. Like, he just struggled against lefties. Like, he just could not get them out. And eventually, the sample size caught up to him because in season, he wasn't, you know, once he was starting every 5 days, he wasn't able to get lefties out.
So the guy in Philadelphia that people are talking about right now, I don't know if you saw this, is Brock Stassi. Do you even know who that is?
I saw Matt Winkleman tweeting about him, but that's about the extent of what I know about Brock Stassi.
Well, Matt was talking about him, and, you know, so Stassi's a 27-year-old career minor leaguer. And, you know, he didn't do much. You know, it's not even that he had, like, great numbers in 2016. But Matt, who, you know, we all respect and like.
Yeah, he knows his stuff.
He knows his stuff. I mean, Matt knows way more about the minors than I do. So, you know, he pointed out that, you know, Stassi's power growth over the last 3 years through his 25 through 27 seasons has been interesting, you know, and it's all swing related. But, you know, the thing he said is, like, well, you know, did the Phillies want to DFA somebody on a full 40-man to give a 27-year-old rookie an opportunity? And I think this is where in spring training, you know, we're smart enough not to, but this is where people sometimes, like, don't see the forest for the trees. Like, to me, Stassi, even if he makes a team, he's a $1 guy in NL only. Like, he's position challenged. He's a first baseman. They might try him in left, but he'd be impaired there. And they're not going to platoon him with Tommy Joseph. Like, Tommy Joseph, they're going to give a shot to play full time. So, you know, if Stassi makes a roster, that's a great story and that's awesome. But, you know, don't get swept away. Like, I think that's what often happens. You know what it's like? It's like,
There's a lot of confirmation bias going on where you like the player, you go out, you see them hit a bunch of home runs in the spring or strike a bunch of guys out, and you go, oh my gosh, it's happening, I'm going to overspend. You know, and we all have gotten sucked into that in the past, and now, and I don't think I do that as much anymore, which is a good
thing. I don't either. And the season ends, you know, the World Series ends in like October, early November now, and there's this long wait, and spring training comes, and spring training, it's like having, you haven't eaten like all day, and it's like having a sleeve of crackers where you're like, you know, and I'm stealing this bit from Eddie Murphy, but, you know, it's like having a sleeve of crackers, like, oh my God, these crackers are delicious, you know, and you're wolfing them down. 2 months later, you're gonna look back and you're like, those were crackers, like that's all I ate. And that's what spring training is. Like, we're so, you and I don't do it, but some people get so excited just to have anything, like any crumb of information, that they get excited about Brock Stassi. Now, I'm not denigrating him. Like, I hope he makes a team. It's a great story. But, like, for us, there's just not much there.
Yeah, exactly. So we've been kind of a little bit down here the last couple of minutes. Let's end on a positive note. What have you been working on? What do you have for articles coming out? Because I have a fun one that I wrote this week I really liked. But do you have anything cool you've been working on?
So what I'm doing is I always try to answer questions that I get in the articles I don't get time to. So somebody asked about adjusting bid limits for smaller leagues and using my bid limits for that. So I'm putting together the approach on how to do that. And, you know, it's not a fun article, but it's definitely something that'll be useful to some of our readers.
You could just write like four words for your article. It'd be like ghost draft stars and scrubs. And that's like the end of the article for smaller leagues. Yeah. That'd be my approach to it. So I had a really cool piece I wrote this week. And once again, thank you to Greg Wellmeyer for letting me guest on his American League version of this, five to watch on pitchers. And I wrote about Francisco Liriano for the American League side, but I wrote the National League side of this. And I wrote about Julio Urias, Ivan Nova, Lance Lynn, Zach Davies, Robert Gazelman, some of my favorite late-round pitchers. Pretty much all of them are going outside the top 270 picks right now. So in a 15-team league, that's like the 18th round. Urias is the only guy who's going in the 12th round right now, so you have to pay a little bit for him. But all these guys, man, I really like them a lot, and you do not have to pay a lot to get them. So those are kind of my picks for this year.
It's one of the cool things about pitching is that you can really, you know, I know Brett talks about this too, but you really don't have to go out and necessarily buy an ace or spend a premium, particularly in a draft, because there's so many pitchers who have promise and we know that some of them are going to hit. Like it's a funny thing in March. We talk with so much certainty about what's going to happen and these bid prices and the ADP. We know, like 2 months in, that so many of these things, like the optimistic note to me is that it's so great a month and a half, 2 months in, that so much changes. And we look back and we're like, wow, like we really thought these things were going to happen for sure. And they just didn't.
Yeah, that was kind of the point of my piece was
that's the fun.
You know, you can get wrapped up in the example I keep going back to is like you can draft like Lance McCullers for a bunch of money, or you can buy five guys for the same amount and spread the risk around a little bit more. So that's kind of what I talked about in the piece, and that's why I picked some of those guys. Like we talked about Ivan Nova on the starting pitcher preview, but what he did in Pittsburgh was pretty legitimate. He made some minor changes as far as mechanic wise, and looked great. And it's like I only have to pay a couple bucks to see if that carries over into this season. Like, why not do that? It's a lot of low risk stuff there. So those were kind of my guys I liked this spring. So cool. Anything else, or are we good to wrap up here?
I think we're done. And you know, next week I'm not sure what we're doing. I know in 2 weeks we're gonna do the Tout Wars recap with Brett talking about the mixed and talking about the NL only. But if you know, I know for our listeners, you usually put out questions. Maybe next week we'll do kind of a free form episode where we just riff off of listener questions.
Yeah, so we might do one of those. I also have – I was going to try and do – every year we've had Jeff Quinton on to do a strategy session. He's a lot of fun to talk to. He has a really interesting perspective on everything as well. So he's one of my favorite podcasts of the year. So we're going to try and do that for next week too. Oh, so we might have a couple – well, we might have a couple podcasts is what I'm saying. So it's draft season. You know, we got to give the people what they want. So –
Are you saying that Jeff is going to be you and Jeff, or are you going to have Jeff come on with me and Brett?
If you want to do that, we can.
I would actually love it. Well, I say this because I would actually love to do a podcast with Jeff because Jeff and I both like talk a lot about like I don't do theory as much as I used to do back in my blogging days, but Jeff and I like email about theory constantly. And if you're into that kind of thing, if you're into auction dynamics, if you're into like psychology and all of that, like it could be a great show. I'm not bucking to be on it, but I'd love to do it if Jeff would.
No, yeah, let's plan that for next week. So we'll have Jeff on with us, and we'll take listener questions as well. So if you're listening to this, you have some auction strategy questions, things like that. We'll definitely get to those. So that's going to do it for all of us here. I'll just wrap up quickly. Thank you for listening. This has been episode 123, Flags Fly Forever, Baseball Perspectives Fantasy Podcast. You know it. Subscribe today with a one-year premium membership to read all of us on baseballperspectives.com. Sign up for super premium membership. You get access to the Bat Signal. Don't forget, follow us on Twitter. Mike is at Mike Gianella. I am at George Bissell. Want to say thank you once again to our special guest, Steve Gardner from USA Today. You can follow him on Twitter at Steve A. Gardner. Make sure you go out and get the Leviathan as well. It's pretty much all you need to get prepared for your draft, in addition to Baseball Perspectives as well. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, review us on iTunes. As always, every rating and review helps us out tremendously. We really appreciate all the support. So for Mike Gianella, this is George Bissell saying thanks for listening. We'll be back next week with Jeff Quinton. It's going to be a good show. So long, everybody.
Bye-bye.